This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Affirm Films and the Kendrick Brothers movie Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters August 23rd. More information is available at overcomermovie.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thank you so much for joining us again. Proverbs 1:7 tells us the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and it is. But what does that mean for the Christian teacher in the public setting where direct connections from knowledge to the giver of all knowledge are not generally allowed? A really important question we're going to talk about today with Jay Jacino. Jay has been teaching for nearly 20 years. He's taught in public, charter, and Christian schools. And today we'll be talking with him about his book, Truth is Fallen in the Street, Examining the Pedagogy of Christian Teachers in Public Schools. Jay, it is great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Janet. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You have taught in the public schools, as I mentioned, as a Christian. You've taught in a number of contexts. What are your observations, first of all, about public education in light of Proverbs 1:7?
Well, public education ultimately is serving to take people away from the truth. And as I make the case in the book, when you take facts and information and disconnect them from God, who is the originator of all things, physical and our world, our universe, and you disconnect them from the purpose that God has, then you have really no functional purpose for those facts. And so as such, that public school system is taking people away from the knowledge of God and from salvation and from living a life that is full in Him.
Right. And yet you do have a lot of Christians who are teaching in the public school system. What was that like for you as a Christian? What was your experience? Was it frustrating? Was it a challenge? How did you deal with it, or how do you deal with it?
Yeah, it was a great challenge. Initially, everything seemed to be okay. But as time went on, it was a great challenge in the area of discipline, the inability to discipline a child the way the child needed to be disciplined was a real challenge, just dealing with content issues, dealing with just content in the classroom. It was a challenge. I mean, I got to the point where, I used to teach a sixth grade class, for instance. I had a study hall the last hour of the day, and I remember walking past a student, and he had a magazine open, sixth grader, and the picture that he was looking at was that of a man stuck to a wall with a butcher knife through his chest. And I paused and I said, "Where'd you get that magazine?" And he said, "The library." And so, I proceeded to check into that. And after finding out that, in fact, that was one of our library magazines, after looking through the magazine a little bit more, I became motivated to deal with that issue. And I got a lot of persecution for that within the system I was at. And it really was a challenge. That was just, one story. There's a lot of other stories I could share, but I'm sure time doesn't allow here.
Oh, man, that's got to be hard. Yeah, it's a little hard to get on the kid when he checked it out of the school's own library, and then you're probably having to fight with the librarian. Well, we got to expose the kids to these things. I mean, that's a nightmare.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a nightmare. Yeah, she was very much against me from the start. And my boss, I remember, he kicked me out of his office. He said, "Get out of my office now before I say something I regret."
Good grief.
And he was a guy that went to, professed to be a Christian, went to the local church, respected man in the community, and this was the kind of thing. This is the kind of thing that kind of really got me going on why I wrote the book in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you talk about knowledge coming from the Lord, and you have to connect knowledge to the Lord, I know that you address this in your book, for example. The common response I've heard from people in the public school setting is, yeah, but you don't have to be a Christian to explain math. You know, there are certain subjects where there's not really a direct line from that subject to God. How do you respond to that kind of claim?
Yeah, those are very common objections, yes, so you're right. I deal with it in the book. A quick response to that would be, why does math work? Why is it, what's its purpose? Where does it come from? How do the principles and laws of mathematics arrive on the scene? Were they created by us? Did we discover them? And your answers to those questions will give a direction to where you're going with math. you know, 1 + 1 = 2. It's true for the atheist. It's true for the Christian. But why is 1 + 1 = 2? Why is that true? And is it relevant? What do we do with that? You know, what do we do with the information that we have? Is there a purpose for it? And that's the kind of way I would begin to answer that question.
Yeah. Now, this almost gets back to a more basic question, which is, what is the purpose of education? Because if you're a teacher and you believe the only thing I'm really here for is to disseminate knowledge and teach that 2 + 2 = 4 and nothing beyond that, isn't that a misunderstanding of what education ought to be in the first place?
Yes. And the Bible, of course, in Ephesians 6:4 says that we're to bring our children up in the fear, a discipline and instruction of the Lord. And that word is paideia, that Greek word. And it's talking about the whole education of the child, not just an academic portion, but it includes that as well. And that's the purpose. And, you know, what does a teacher do? What should a teacher do? Imparting knowledge. Well, if the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, in Christ are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. We look at Proverbs 2:4 and 5. It says, if you see her, seeking for wisdom, if you see her as silver, seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures. Mm-hmm. Then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. So, you know, what is the purpose of education at all? You're right. I believe it is to transmit knowledge. And knowledge is directly connected to God. There is a moral component to education, even education in English and history and science and math. There's a moral component there. When you leave that moral component out, you are essentially missing the point of education in the first place.
Wow. What have you seen as far as the pedagogy of Christian teachers who are in public schools? I mean, a lot of these folks, and I know a lot of them myself, are trying to do the best they can in a setting that can be hostile toward Christians. But what is generally going on among Christian teachers that needs to be fixed? What is and could be fixed?
Well, let me start by saying, you know, I didn't write the book to destroy teachers who are doing the best they can in the public setting. I'm out to destroy arguments, not destroy people. So I think that I want to start there with this question. My heart is to encourage teachers who are in that setting to take a fresh look at what they're there for. And so to answer your question, you know, what could be fixed? I simply make the case in the book. And again, my rationale is all there. But in order for knowledge, if it is connected to God, to be knowledge in fact, we need to include God in the picture. And so in a classroom setting, the teacher should not avoid God, should not avoid Jesus Christ, should not avoid the Word of God in their teaching. Now, I fully understand that if a teacher actually did that, you know, actually brought up God in the Bible and Jesus Christ and whatnot in their teaching, the consequence would be most likely a job ending for them. I understand that. But it can be done. I think it should be done because this is what the purpose of education is.
Yeah.
As a Christian, for a Christian teacher, that's what they should be doing, because it's the truth. And doesn't everyone have a right to the truth? I mean, we have a right for everything else in the world, right? We have a right to believe for a different gender. We have a right to do all kinds of things. Why don't we have the right to the truth? The truth, right. The full truth, and nothing but the truth. When you take away God as the foundation for knowledge, and you take away the purpose that He has for it, then you're not getting... you're only getting a third of what's there, and that's the facts, if you will. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. And my short answer to your question would be, what's wrong is the ACLU, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, you know, all of these groups that will come in and swoop down with lawsuits the minute any teacher tries to actually mention God, mention Jesus Christ, have a Bible on the chair, have a Bible on the desk. I mean, we know how these things go. And I think a lot of those lawsuits and a lot of the bad publicity that has been brought to bear on a lot of Christians who are teaching in the public schools is exactly what has made so many Christian teachers, I think, very hesitant and afraid to even figure out how to do what you're talking about. But I think it's extremely important. We're going to go to a quick break. We'll come back with Jay Giacino. His book is called Truth Is Fallen in the Street. We'll come back right after this. This is Janet Mefford for Preborn. Nearly one in four pregnancies in America will end in abortion. The Ministry of Preborn provides free ultrasounds for abortion-minded women nationwide. When a mother sees her baby on an ultrasound and hears the baby's heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life. Here's the story of a mom who went to one of Preborn's centers and met the baby she had planned to abort.
They took me to the back and they introduced me to my child for the first time through an ultrasound. I was able to see this life growing inside of me, hear the heartbeat, and nothing else mattered at that point. I was a mother to be.
Your gift of $140 will cover the cost of five ultrasounds. All donations are tax deductible. You can help save a baby's life by donating to Preborn. To donate, call now 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY. 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com.
If you're a medical professional, here's a way to move from success to even greater significance. Mercy Ships has an urgent need for pediatric registered nurses. You'll be joining dozens of volunteer medical professionals who've been blessed by the opportunity.
I think all nurses should do something like this. To serve the unserved is one of the most beautiful experiences.
Get more information by visiting mercyships.org/nurses. Mercy Ships, bringing hope and healing to the world's forgotten poor.
From Affirm Films, Provident Films, and the Kendrick Brothers comes Overcomer. John Harrison is a frustrated coach questioning his value until he crosses paths with a student struggling on her own journey.
What have you allowed to define you? When you find your identity and the one who created you, it'll change your whole perspective. You
Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shirer, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters August 23rd. More information is available at overcomermovie.com.
We are back on Janet Mefford today. Great to have you with us, and great to have with us Jay Jacino. He is a teacher for nearly 20 years. He's taught in public schools, charter schools, Christian schools, and is out with the book Truth Is Fallen in the Street, examining the pedagogy of Christian teachers in the public schools. You are really right, Jay, I think, when you talk about the connection between knowledge and epistemology and morality. We were saying, for instance, a few minutes ago that you can't teach any subject without somehow connecting it to the giver of all knowledge, who is God himself. But the question for a lot of Christian teachers, no doubt, is, how do I do that? In other words, you know, when I walk into my classroom tomorrow, what should I do differently, Jay? What should I try to do a little bit differently so I can improve the way that I'm teaching?
Sure. Tell them the truth. And that sounds like a simple answer. But what I mean by that is tell them the way it is. So, for instance, if you're a science teacher and I teach biology, I teach chemistry, God is the creator of life, and he created life for a purpose. And these are basic facts that need to be shared within the, within the educational setting, within the subject matter, for students to be able to place the information that they've received in a proper place. And once it's in a proper place, it can be used effectively. If the teacher doesn't give that information, the student has no place to put that information. There's no order to it. A Christian teacher to implement what I'm saying, they simply have to see how their discipline is related to God. And interestingly enough, many teachers don't know that. They don't understand that. They've not been taught to think this way. But I would submit that's where they can start is to study. How does English relate to God? You know, what does history have to do with God? What about science? What about math? What about art? You know, and then once they can learn these things, they start implementing them in their classroom and not being afraid to use the Word of God in the process. So key is using the Word of God as a foundational tool. And that's what they need to do differently.
Right.
Let me address, if you don't mind. Yeah,
sure.
Go ahead.
No, finish. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to address the point before the break the big thing seems that I have argued that I have heard over and over is that we are to obey the governing authorities. And in the public setting today, it is not legal, if you will, or at least it's assumed to be not legal, to talk about God, talk about Jesus, to use the Bible in a public school. But I make the case that government was established by God himself, and he established it for the administration of good, not evil. And if that's the case, then any individual who openly acknowledges God within that civic realm could not possibly be in any way acting contrary to God and his established order in society. And so I think it's a fallacy to believe that that a Christian is being a good Christian, if you will, or obeying God by not saying anything, because God established government and it's for the administration of good, not evil. So this is a contradiction that I see, and I believe it's a fatal one.
It is, and yet I will hear from Christian friends of mine who are teachers who say, well, I can have an influence on kids who would have no other exposure to a Christian adult perhaps in their entire lives. I like the ministry of being in the public schools. If I openly teach about God, if I mention Jesus Christ, I'm going to get immediate complaints and I'll probably get thrown out. Why don't I just leave and go to a Christian school? Is that not a better option? What are your thoughts on that? Because there are different schools of thought that Christian teachers ought to just be in Christian schools or homeschooling their own kids. You forget about the public schools. What do you say to that?
Well, agreed. There are many different thoughts. Let me first say that, I'm not denying that teachers do have a positive impact in the public system. Again, that's very important to understand,
right?
That I'm not saying that there is no good being done. But if teachers did exit the public school system, they would be able to teach fully in their calling. Again, example, I teach at a Christian school in Sewanee, Georgia. It's an international Christian school, and I'm part of the hiring that happens here. And, we have teachers that come in, and one specific instance I remember where a teacher was coming from the public school, and in the interview, I wasn't super excited about the interview because of the history in the public setting, but the teacher was just absolutely thrilled and happy that they were going to be able to come to a Christian school and teach the way they should teach.
Wow.
In other words, I think a lot of teachers in the public setting who are Christians, they know they should be doing better. They know they should be doing different. They want to, but they're just strapped, if you will, and they don't do it. But when they get a chance to teach in a different setting, they just blossom.
Yeah.
And so that clearly is something that they could do. But again, I'm making the case of what they should do. What they should do is teach it the way it is. Teach it to the according to the truth. Connect the dots, if you will, because that's what they're paid to do. That's what they should do from a moral standpoint,
yes,
wherever they are, whether they're in public or Christian setting.
Now, Jay, for example, when you talk about the fact that you've taught biology and chemistry, if you're in a chemistry lab, walk us through a scenario, because I think that would help paint the picture for a lot of people who are listening. You're having a chemistry lab. The kids are looking through the microscope at cells. How do you tie God to that? How would you teach those kids in that setting?
Well, from a big picture, I'd say, look, we go into the lab, whether it's chemistry, biology, whatever, any data that's taken and be able to be functional is based on a standard. It's based on measurements. We measure things. We tell how hot they are, cold they are, how long they are. All kinds of measurements are done. All of them have a standard. You don't know something until you have a standard to base your, the numbers on, if you will. And I would simply make the case that, look, that's the way it is. The physical reality that we see and work with every day is a fingerprint of God. It points to the spiritual truth. The fact that there is a standard that helps us to know things physically is evidence, if you will, that there is a spiritual standard. And the only way you're going to know something, what you're doing right or wrong, is whether you can identify that physical standard or that spiritual standard and measure from it. And that gives us knowledge about what we're doing, whether it's right or wrong, good or bad.
Yeah, I guess the microscope would. Yeah, I was going to say, I guess the microscope would be biology. Now that I think about it, wasn't chemistry, was the beakers.
Okay.
Yeah, I mixed that up.
It wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter. Yeah, let me add a little bit more to your chemistry, or to the chemistry example that you brought up. Electrons are always seeking to be stable. And that's an interesting, that's an attribute of God. God provides in us, and the fact that he does not change, he provides stability. And the fact that there are different substances allow, God is infinite, and the infinity of God in chemistry, we look at the vast number of chemical, just simple chemicals and chemical compounds that are available. It is a demonstration of God's infinity and the amazing way in which God has designed things, but yet those chemical reactions occur because electrons want to be stable. It's more stable to bond with this element, then that chemical reaction takes place, stability is achieved, and we see the very nature of God, his unchangeableness, his infinity, all wrapped up simply in the desire of electrons to find stability and lowest energy state.
That's great. Now, what about the resistance? What about the kid who hears this, goes home, tells atheist mom calls the principal, you get hauled into the office, now you're in big trouble, and the teacher says, what good have I finally done? I got myself fired. What do you say to that teacher?
Right. Well, believe it or not, I've had that happen in Christian schools.
Wow, so, really?
You know, that's to give a unfortunately, the state of things has progressed in many places to that level.
Yeah.
But, you know, you take the battle wherever it is. And again, you know, I make the case in the book that Paul writes in Romans, I believe, 12:18, says that we are, as far as it depends upon us, live at peace with all men. Right?
Yes.
But he was the one, if you read the book of Acts, that started riot after riot. I mean, he didn't go out to start a riot, but the fact that he was preaching the truth, people didn't like that, and riots began to the
right.
point where, you know, in Ephesus, or, you know, great is Artemis of the Ephesians, was shouted for 2 hours, you know. And so this was because Paul simply taught the truth. And so, you know, when the kid goes home to tell his atheist parents what happened, that's going to bring on some trouble, absolutely. But that's something that we should not fall away from. And this is why truth has fallen in the street, is that we as Christians are unwilling to engage that battle. And we can engage that battle and do it lovingly. And you know what? In the process of arguing a case, people on the outside hear the case argued. And maybe you won't win the case with the person you're dealing with, but the people listening on the outside have a way to evaluate what's going on.
And, do you think then, Jay, and do you think that we're here in the public school situation we're in part because we have been too passive, we have been too willing to go along with all of the take God out of this and take God out of that nonstop and just, you know, went along with it?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look back at the origins of public education, and you go back a long ways, but you can go to you know, John Dewey, you know, your Humanist Manifesto signer in 1933, you know, religious humanism was his goal. Yeah. And, you know, not just him, but a whole bunch of other people, but he became a very instrumental person in the development of public education. And it wasn't too long after him, and, you know, in the 1950s, I'm not just sure what year, and correct me if I'm wrong, your listeners will understand, but, you know, God began to be pulled out of the public setting, and Christians let it happen. Yeah, we just stopped. You know, there was some fighting initially, and there's, I'm sure, history of all that, but we've let it happen to the point where today that's just the way it is. And I think we have fallen over, we have just fallen down or just kind of rolled over and let the whole thing pass us by. We need to be fighting, not in a military gun sort of a sense, but in an argument sense, you know, for the truth. And why give up? And if they run you out, then go somewhere else. I mean, you know, you mentioned it earlier about going out of the public school into the private school. Look what happened in the church.
Yeah.
When persecution happened in the book of Acts.
They dealt with
it.
Yeah, that's it. Jay Jacino, we're out of time, but the book is called Truth Has Fallen in the Street, An Important Challenge. And Jay, great to have you with us. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Janet.
You are so welcome. We'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Affirm Films and the Kendrick Brothers movie Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters August 23rd. More information is available at overcomermovie.com. Welcome back to this hour of Janet Mefford Today, which is brought to you by Affirm Films and the Kendrick Brothers movie Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters August 23rd. More information is available at overcomermovie.com. I want to talk a little bit about the Never Trumpers. I know you thought that whole thing was dead and gone. But no, it's really not dead and gone, because we are heading into a new election season, and that means they have to come up with a new strategy to keep evangelicals from going to the polls and voting for the wrong person. And in this case, the wrong person is always Donald Trump. It doesn't really matter what he does, what his policies are, what wins he accomplishes for conservatives. It really doesn't matter, because evangelicals are sinning and have completely lost their principles in every way, shape and form by voting for the GOP. That's how they see it, the never Trumpers. So we have never Trumpers within the Republican Party who just will not let it go. Now, this comes as this week you have about 400 pastors and faith leaders who are going to be spending some time at Liberty University. It's all about coming together and learning how to bring their faith to the public square and how to make a difference. And according to news reports and according to Liberty officials, they've had this longstanding tradition of encouraging pastors to become culturally and politically involved. Well, certainly Liberty, Jerry Falwell. Now, Jerry Falwell Jr. is there on the staff at Liberty University. But Jerry Falwell, founder of that university, of course, it goes back to the Moral Majority days. And this was, in fact, something that made a big difference in, oh, let me think, the 1980 election of Ronald Reagan. So there's a longstanding tradition of pastors coming together and getting encouragement to stand for what is right in the public square. Frankly, I think we need more of this, not less of it. And the reason I say that is because this is a time in history where, unlike the late 70s, you are increasingly seeing the left pushing for Christians to get out of the public square. It's not appropriate for you to be in the public square. You can worship at home, but you certainly shouldn't push your homophobic, bigoted, racist views on the rest of America. We are just too progressive and we can't stand that kind of thing. Forget that. Forget that. That's ridiculous. Now, when I'm talking about never Trumpers, I got to talk about Ben Howe. And I have some stuff from Ben Howe that's going to curl your hair a little bit. Ben Howe, you might know him, you might not know him. He has been, I think, a contributing editor at Red State, and he's been a conservative figure, but he was a big time never Trumper. I'm going to get into some details on that in just a second. But I want to start out with this interview that he gave to MSNBC, because he's out with a book. And his book is called, you'll love this, his book is called The Immoral Majority: Why Evangelicals Chose Political Power Over Christian Values. I'm already yawning because if I've seen 700 stories on this topic in the last month, it's probably an understatement. Okay, maybe it's an overstatement. But I've seen so many. They have one template since 2016. Christians have sold their souls to the devil by voting for Donald Trump, to which I have said for the last 2 years, what would you have had us do? Vote for Hillary Clinton? Honestly, stay home? Oh, I'm sure. That would have been a great thing for evangelicals to do, to stay home. Because we didn't need those conservative judges on the Supreme Court anyway. We certainly didn't need any more conservative judges added to the federal bench, such that the Ninth Circuit is actually looking like a somewhat temperate judicial body at this point. We don't need any pro-life laws passed. We don't need any religious freedom protections. We don't need any sort of movement on Israel and moving the embassy to Jerusalem. Who cares about any of that, right? Who cares? I mean, Hillary would have been all in on the Equality Act. And boy, Christians should really go in that direction, shouldn't we? At any rate, Ben Howe, the quote unquote conservative, was on this show on MSNBC. And I want to play a little bit of this for you. Listen to this question from the MSNBC anchor and then listen to Howe's answer. This is cut to.
The fact that President Trump separates children from their families at the border or has an affair with a porn star gets a pass because what?
Well, what's interesting is the people who support him are in a lot of ways adopting his behaviors. They see a winner. They see somebody who is finally fighting. That's what they're always talking about. So they adopt his behaviors. Whatever he does, they will emulate because they think that's a winning strategy, no matter how bad it gets, because as long as the election goes the way they want, they think they're going to get the policy victories that they need. But mostly the policy victories that they talk about when they discuss these higher reasons, abortion, religious liberty, things of that nature, those aren't their number one concerns. And polling shows it's really the economy, terrorism, things that, you know, their fears and their wants, not these larger religious things.
Who are you talking about on both of those things? The first point that he makes is that when Trump Well, the anchor says when Trump separates children at the border, well, that's what happens. You separate children from their parents when their parents commit a crime. And if you're not going through the appropriate port of entry when you're trying to claim asylum, then you're going to be separated from your kids. And oh, by the way, a lot of those people who are coming across the border have kids who aren't their kids. But Ben Howe apparently doesn't want to talk about that very much because he wants to talk about how those who vote for Donald Trump, evangelicals presumably, are adopting Trump's behavior. Not only are they giving him a pass on all his many evils, but they are adopting and emulating him. Really? Really? I haven't seen that. Adopting his behavior, emulating his behavior. Who and where and when and how? I don't really see that at all. And by the way, when he is painting with that broad brush as to saying that evangelicals don't really have issues, social issues like abortion at the top of their list, where are you getting that? Where are you getting that? Of course, all of these other things are also important. Immigration is important and the economy is important and all of those things. But the social issues are the heart and soul of what conservative Christians care about. I'm sorry, but those of us who really have biblical conviction about the sanctity of human life and marriage and religious freedom, you better believe those are at the top of the list. So I don't know who you're trying to smear there, Ben Howe, but you better have some proof for it instead of just talking off the top of your head. Now, listen to this question. Cut three.
The politics trump the word of the Bible. I mean, if you look at Matthew, you're not going to have families separated. You're going to help the poor and clothe the poor and all those things. We talked about this in the break, which is that a lot of evangelicals said, we didn't elect a saint, we elected a president, which is to say, we don't like some of the things he does, but he's going to protect us.
What's so fascinating to me about that is a lot of the evangelical leaders today were still around in the 1990s. And they cited the good economy, the fact that it was a time of peace, and they said that those are no excuses for supporting somebody of low character.
Right.
And the moment that that low character was a Republican, it switched to, we're not electing a saint. So it spoke to me that even if they were right about what they said about Bill Clinton in the 90s, even if they were correct to say that character matters more, that's not why they were saying it. That became clear once Donald Trump was the nominee.
Okay, well, I'm not really sure who he's speaking about there either. Is he referring to who? Franklin Graham, James Dobson? I'm not sure. He doesn't say who he's speaking of in that particular clip. But I would say this, the 1990s gave evangelicals a clearer choice, didn't they? When you were looking at the choices that people had in the 90s for the president, we had someone else on the other side who we believe did have good character. So why is that not an important point to bring up? It's as if Bill Clinton was rejected whole hog for a lot of reasons, by the way, because of, in part, his terrible moral character. But it does matter when you have an alternate choice that not only affords you the ability to vote for somebody with better character, but also better policies. So you can't compare apples to oranges in this instance. I have said from day one, I have yet to meet, in terms of just normal layman Christians that I run into and talk to every single day, I have yet to meet anybody who said my first choice during the primaries was Donald Trump. I have yet to meet one Christian who said that. Every single one of them, regardless of who they supported initially, came to the conclusion that Donald Trump had to be their choice because the other choice was completely untenable for policy reasons and for character reasons. And that's going to become a very important point as I continue to play for you some of what Ben Howe, author of this new book, had to say about the evils of evangelicals voting for Donald Trump. We'll get back to it when we come back. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. More More than likely, you've seen or heard about the recent abortion law in New York that allows babies to be aborted up to full term. Your heart breaks, but you're not sure how you can make a difference in a positive way. The Ministry of Preborn invites you to help be the change. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. And right now, the Preborn Center in the heart of New York City needs your help to stay open and help women choose life. When a woman sees her baby on an ultrasound, 8 out of 10 times, she'll choose life.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Would you join with Preborn in helping the New York City moms in crisis choose life? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds and help save 5 babies' lives. To donate, dial 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY. Or there's a Preborn banner ad to click at janetmefford.com. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com, and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Ben Howe, the conservative, quote unquote. I'm tired of scare quotes in general, but I think you have to put the scare quotes around conservative Ben Howe, and you're going to see why the further along we go here. He was on MSNBC this week promoting his new book, The Immoral Majority, because that's what the world needs. It needs yet another lecture from a never-Trumper. Okay. Please beat us up. We'll pay you $27.95 to purchase your book, and maybe we can hit ourselves in the head with it while we're at it. Good grief. At any rate, Ben Howe is talking about how evangelicals have sold their souls and they're a bunch of hypocrites and now they're acting like Trump. We're acting like Trump. Then in walks Michael Steele into the conversation, the former chairman of the Republican National Committee, he who just put out a book. And there was a story from Business Insider where he called evangelicals who support Trump the biggest phonies of all and dropped a couple of really unmentionable words to describe the president. So he clearly is in a position to morally judge evangelicals for their choice of a candidate, right? Listen to what Michael Steele had to say to Ben Howe. This is cut 4.
Oh, Ben, baby, I love this book. Thank you so. It is so long overdue. I've just been fed up with the hypocrisy from these guys. I'm sitting here in this political article looking at a quote from the Liberty University president, Jerry Falwell Jr., who says, quote, "We all wish he would be a little bit more careful with his language, but it's nothing that's a deal breaker, and it's not something we're going to get morally indignant about." As the president stands at these rallies and uses the Lord's name in vain, as we are reminded we shouldn't do by a lot of these individuals, what's your take on is it really just the political pulse and the power pulse here, or is this something more morally corrupt that's going on inside the evangelical community at this point?
Okay, well, I'm reading Michael Steele's comments about Donald Trump and about evangelicals in this article, and I'm thinking, hey, pot, you might not want to call the kettle black. And what I'm saying here is you have a filthy mouth. So don't get all over Donald Trump for having a filthy mouth and forget the fact that you also have a filthy mouth. I don't for 1 minute support Donald Trump's language. I can't stand it, and it is morally important. But the bigger issue has to do with the nation. And it drives me crazy how these people are all about every little detail of Trump failing this and failing that. It's a strategy. They want evangelicals to be guilty, and they want them to stay home, and they want them not to vote for Donald Trump in 2020 because they want to advance different policies. Clearly, if they didn't want to advance different policies, then they wouldn't be working overtime to try to dissuade evangelicals from doing what they did in 2016. Listen to Ben Howe's response. This is Cut 5.
I think it's both. I mean, the moral corruption is something that, frankly, took me a while to recognize. I've been an evangelical all my life. My dad was a pastor. He was a Southern Baptist pastor. He actually worked with Jerry Falwell Jr.'s father at Liberty University. And for a long time, I think I was willing to look past certain things as well. But I would look at the Swaggerts and the Bakers and so on with all the Pentecostal scandals of the 1980s, and I would see these congregations that would be so forgiving and willing to look past things, and I would think they were rubes and think, oh, how can you do that? Then Jerry Falwell Sr. would come out and blame 9/11 on gays and lesbians, and as long as he said sorry, I was okay. So I started to realize that, yeah, we give passes to the people that we think are doing what we want, and we don't hold them accountable. And Trump, in a lot of ways, exemplifies the exact type of caricature that you would think of when you think of one of those 1980s evangelicals, you know, the white guy with the shiny teeth telling everybody that the promised land is coming. I think what's most interesting to me is that they keep saying taking the Lord's name in vain, but they're using the Lord's name in vain every day when they claim that he is a biblical president, when they claim that God is using him as his vessel, and they do make these claims. That is using the Lord's name in vain for the acquisition of power.
You might want to watch it there, Ben Howe, because you don't know what you're talking about. First of all, to compare Donald Trump to Jimmy Swaggart and Jim Baker, the reason those guys were so roundly criticized by Christians as well is because they were holding themselves up as men of God. Last I checked, Donald Trump has never held himself up as a wonderful man of God. What he has done is he has supported things that Christians care about. And we're at a point in our national history where that matters to us, and it ought to matter to us. And I'm just sick and tired of this stuff. And here's especially why I'm sick and tired of this stuff. Let's go back to 2016. Here's Ben Howe. Oh, you terrible evangelicals, you're emulating Donald Trump. You're giving him a pass. You're doing this when we've done no such thing. I mean, think about this. When he's citing Falwell and blaming 9/11 on homosexuals, and what does it have to do with us? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're citing a man who is no longer on this earth in order to bash today's evangelicals years later. It has nothing to do with anything. It's just he's mad. He's a never-Trumper, and Trump got elected, and it angers him. It's why he's writing this book in the first place. But let's go back to 2016, shall we? Also on MSNBC, where Andrea Mitchell interviewed Ben Howe before the election. Listen to how it went back then. This is Cut 6.
On primary night, Ben tweeted, "I'm with her." So you are actually going to support Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump?
I would definitely support Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump.
Whoa, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Ben Howe is the moral conscience of evangelicals. That's what he's leading us to believe, right? He's the moral conscience. I'm going to bring evangelicals back to their senses. How in the world could you vote for somebody with shiny teeth? You're emulating him. He is evil. And you voted for him. I'm with her, though. You're with Hillary Clinton. Let me just think for a moment. Let's talk about this absolutely wonderful, wonderful, stupendous moral character of Hillary Clinton, shall we? Perhaps you could read some of Ed Klein's books. Ed Klein, whom I've interviewed a number of times on this program, and has written all kinds of behind-the-scenes exposés about the Clintons and what has gone on, particularly with Hillary Clinton behind the scenes. I reread one of them recently, and let me tell you something. I think Hillary Clinton could swear Donald Trump under the table compared to what she says. It's unbelievable to me. Not to mention the policies, not to mention the years and years of scandals, not to mention she doesn't just lie. She lies without even trying to look like she's not lying. She doesn't even care. And that's something that even Democrats have commented on for years. Go back to the triangulation book that Christopher Hitchens wrote back in the day about Bill Clinton. It's just amazing to me. He's with Hillary, but he considers himself to be in a moral position to tell us that we're evil for voting for Donald Trump. Well, at least Donald Trump is pro-life. At least Donald Trump stood up for the nation of Israel. At least Donald Trump got us out of the stupid Paris climate deal. and the Iran deal, which was a debacle. What about the issue of religious freedom? What about the Little Sisters of the Poor? Would you have preferred, Ben Howe, for Hillary to get in so she could punish those nuns? Because you know those nuns had it coming. They should have to pay for contraception and for abortion-inducing drugs. Right, Ben? I'm with her. How about homosexuality? All in favor of that? And what are the reasons? Listen to Cut 7.
There's been talk, you just talked to Bill Kristol a little bit about third-party candidates. That would be great if it looked like it was realistic and there wasn't a chance that it would simply help Donald Trump. Then I would support that. But as it stands right now, I think it's going to come down to Hillary versus Trump. And Trump just can't be allowed in the Oval Office, as far as I'm concerned.
And why is that?
I think he is, I mean, I've used some pretty harsh words in the last couple of days, so I'll use them here as well. I think he's a sociopathic liar. I've referred to him as a maniac. I've watched his character unfold over the last 10 months. In June, I thought he was just bombastic, a celebrity who was trying to make headlines, things like that. But as I've watched his character unfold in real time in the debates, I just saw this side of him that made me know that his reactionary nature and frankly, his sociopathic tendencies make him too unstable to hold the highest office in the land. I don't like Hillary Clinton that much, especially disagree with just about every one of her policies. But I tend to think that she's a calmer, more rational human being than Donald Trump is.
Okay, Ben. No one cares what you think. He even put out a documentary through his company called The Sociopath about Donald Trump. So we know where you stand. You don't believe in any of Hillary Clinton's policies and you don't really like her, but you tweeted out hashtag I'm with her. You know what? You have forfeited any right to lecture any evangelical, as far as I'm concerned, on who to vote for. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. So as you begin to hear more of this rhetoric ramping up, trying to guilt evangelicals, you're terrible. All you have to say to people is, who would you prefer I vote for? And if they will be honest and answer that question, then you'll know everything you need to know. We got to leave it there. Thanks for being with us here on Janet Mefford today. God bless you. We'll see you next time.